on today's episode of the Conspiracy Manifesto.
10-4. Yeah, I'm gonna need some backup.
These aren't politicians. These are corrupt officials running Iraq. These are totally corrupt people.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Conspiracy Manifesto. This week's episode is going to be a new series on whistleblowers. Once a month, I'm going to cover the secrets and the people that release them to the public. Secrets of government or organizations and leaked information to a wrongdoing or an unethical project of some sort. As is in the US and most other countries, somebody who blows the whistle on a secret project, even if it's in the better interest of the public, they are ostracized from society. They're blacklisted. Some are even imprisoned and revoked their citizenship. And what I love about the subject of whistleblowers is how people always ask about proof on conspiracies, which, as a science nerd, I wholeheartedly respect. But the truth is that once somebody's at that level of having access to that deep and dark information that's kept so secret for a reason, they are too deep in the system at that point and have everything to lose by whispering even a word about it. Not only that, but they're being tracked every move they make, so it rarely happens. Today I'm covering one of the most infamous whistleblowers in American history, and in my opinion, is truly a hero. Edward Snowden. Snowden was a subcontractor for the NSA as a computer intelligence consultant. In 2013, he blew the whistle on a secret global surveillance program where telephone and internet records of millions of Americans were being recorded and stored. Just a quick background on the NSA, the agency originated out of terrorist surveillance after the Pearl Harbor attacks from Japan on the United States, which was by law only able to look outward at other countries' data, but not inward at the American population. But this project escalated in budget and security measures after 9/11. President Bush declared a wartime emergency, and from 2002 on, the NSA was used to analyze the world's data, including the American people, in the name of preventing terrorism. Snowden wasn't the first whistleblower on an NSA surveillance operation. A couple years earlier, the Thin Thread Group, which included Thomas Drake, were pinned for a release of information to the New York Times in 2007. The article discussed an operation called the Trailblazer Project, which was a secret surveillance operation wiretapping domestic phone calls within the United States. Everybody in the group claimed that they hadn't released any information, and even the reporter who published the article agreed that they were not the whistleblowers. Regardless, in 2010, Thomas Drake was charged with the Espionage Act regarding the secrets of the Trailblazer Project, which at the time, there wasn't even documents that were released to the New York Times. There was no physical evidence that was released at all, so there really wasn't a leak as large as what was released in 2013 by Edward Snowden. And Snowden actually learned a lot from Thomas Drake and the mistakes that were made and what to avoid. So he actually requested a medical absence and fled to Hong Kong, where he then met with The Guardian magazine. He was also featured in a documentary called Citizen 4. He leaked thousands of documents to The Guardian. I do have a link on the episode website where you can find an archive of those documents that Edward Snowden leaked to The Guardian in 2013. So, what exactly was even in these documents? The first thing that was discovered was PRISM. It's an NSA program that requests data from big tech like Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple, and others, which, of course, they are compelled by law to provide this data to the NSA because it's a government agency. The second thing that was discovered was DishFire, which extracted contact and call transactions, as well as financial transactions that are made on devices between banking apps. The third thing was Verizon and AT&T provided all records on all of its customers, which was exactly what Thomas Drake had claimed in 2007 and nobody listened to. A computer system was discovered called X-KeyScore that searches and analyzes internet data from users all over the globe. It was discovered through that program that 120 global leaders were being spied on and tracked. Another thing discovered in the documents was that the NSA has agents tasked specifically with breaking down encryption and security measures online, like HTTPS and SSL. For example, when you see the lock at the top of an internet site before the HTTPS, it indicates to you that a website has a secure connection, and the NSA has dedicated a team to getting past these encrypted walls, which is referred to as the Pegasus Project, and is probably one of the most talked about things in the tech community from what was discovered in this NSA leak. But it's a huge threat to internet security because by creating these back doors through encryption, it makes the underlying data on that web page extremely vulnerable to other hackers, including our personal information as users. And then the sixth thing that was discovered was something called TAO, which is a Tailored Access Operatives Program, which was a team of elite NSA hackers. So for releasing these documents, Snowden was charged with two counts of the Espionage Act. He's considered an enemy of the state, and his citizenship from the United States was permanently revoked. He eventually moved to Russia and was granted asylum in 2013 and permanent residence in 2020, where he now resides. There's been some regulatory actions by the United States and even by the UK by passing acts that are trying to curb mass surveillance being done by the government. But it's practically useless as they continue to pass contradictory laws, such as the Protect the Children Act, and there's many iterations of these Protect the Children Acts and other things that are trying to prevent terrorism, but it's a guise for more access to our data and privacy. Although I do believe that these can be used to prevent crimes, and that's a different aspect that I'm going to discuss later in the episode. But the government isn't the only group that has interest in our data. It's no conspiracy that at this point, everything you do online, even audible conversations near a device, will lead to targeted ads. We're seeing ads every day about products that we mentioned the day before. And the larger concern is what else this data could be used for. At some point, there will be enough data to feed into AI that will be able to predict an individual's every move, their thoughts, habits, moods, frequent locations, and this data can and will be used to control, brainwash, and manipulate people. It's basically MKUltra on a larger scale. And we see this already with internet echo chambers, where your social media news feeds are curated to your patterns, and you're only shown what you already agree with, thus amplifying your own beliefs louder in an echo chamber. Instead of providing opposing beliefs to allow an individual to make their own educated opinion, governments around the world use these echo chambers on social media and other apps to manipulate elections and spy on their citizens. It would be fairly easy to take this data about somebody and feed them information over time that will manipulate their belief systems and the corporations and politicians that they support. Overall, this gives AI the upper hand on the outcome of our society, and the masters of big tech the reins to control it. So how do we achieve internet freedom? So first of all, get yourself a VPN. They essentially encrypt your internet presence by using remote servers to connect to whatever site you're browsing, thus hiding your IP address and encrypting your data from cyber attacks or onlookers. I also highly recommend looking into the Tor project, which I have linked on the website under episode 4. But what Tor is an internet-connected software with its own internet browser. Tor is most popular with privacy aficionados for its reliable encryption and covering users' internet tracks. And it's absolutely anonymous and doesn't even require a VPN. So I highly recommend Tor. I also recommend using DuckDuckGo as a browser instead of Google or Bing, if anybody actually uses Bing. But it's basically a browsing platform just like Google that does not collect cookies or sell your data. So just creating the smallest data footprint possible so you are the least stalkable by the desired data manipulators. So now we've gotten to my opinions and my musings on the subject. A lot of people will advocate for strict internet laws that are going to restrict internet content. Which, if you ban anything from the surface internet, it will still happen on the dark web. Which, just a little breakdown, the surface web is, you know, what we see on the everyday internet. The news sites, the social media, Google, etc. Then you have the deep web, which is lower than the surface web, and it's where all of our, like, really private and personal information is, with banks and medical hospitals and different software that uses higher levels of encryption are going to be in that deep web. And then even below that, you have the dark web, which gets its name for a reason, because that's where all the really illegal things happen on the internet that are harder to find, but they are there and they can be pretty disturbing. So just a warning, a censored warning, if you do use Tor, you use Onion sites to navigate. And so instead of .com, it's .onion. And you can find some really interesting things. I use it often to look at declassified documents and conspiracy theories that are hidden from the surface web. So it can be really helpful of a resource, but just be careful where you click and make sure that you're at least 18 plus, because there are some pretty disturbing things on there that you want to avoid at all costs but are likely to come across eventually. So just a trigger warning there. But the thing is that whatever you hide from the surface web is going to happen. Just like when you prohibit drinking and marijuana, people are going to find these things illegally. And it prevents free speech by restricting what content can be on the internet. In my opinion, I don't think the internet and its content needs to be restricted, but rather data privacy and security needs to be protected. And internet awareness needs to be educated. Awareness about election manipulation and mind control through subliminal ads needs to be more prevalent. False information is on literally every site. They are all bound to have misinformation. Even our own educational curriculum is flawed and missing information. So remaining subjective to any information in life is really the key. But there needs to be more oversight in terms of governments being involved with internet law and to be strictly enforced with warrants in order to search someone's data. They can't just buy our data and use it behind the scenes. They need to have absolute probable cause and a warrant to be sifting through somebody's data. And these companies should not be able to sell our data to just anybody. We should have the rights to our own data. If the government came to me regarding a crime and asked for a limited set of my data because they had probable cause of me committing a violent crime, and my data could further prove my innocence or my guilt, I would absolutely have no problem with handing that data over. And I could see the benefits to them catching murderers or pedophiles through finding, you know, child pornography on their computers. It's absolutely an important resource in stopping crime. So I can understand how that's useful. We just have to find a better way to oversee the ability for the government to be able to access this data, and the companies that are selling this data to them also need to be overseen. I think it's concerning to see so many internet platforms start to be able to restrict their content, like Facebook and Instagram, removing what they call misinformation. Because if somebody wants to believe climate change is a hoax and they're not able to do their own research, it's a more important problem that needs to be addressed. That the public has an inability to critically think and discern between quality resources. that's something that needs to be taught early in curriculum now that internet is so prevalent in our lives. But by restricting this content on the internet and allowing one party to come in and control the narrative of what is or isn't accurate news, it's basically what China does to its population in regards to rejecting any media that disagrees with the narrative from the government. By deciding for the public what's defined as truth, when we already know that the government lies to us all the time about hemp, aliens, and them spying on our every conversation, they are the last form of oversight that I want on my internet and information capabilities. It's truly unfortunate that the richest corporations control the algorithms of these apps, and they become the largest players in brainwashing tactics. But it's just as easy for us as the user to delete these apps and to not use them, but to use that time instead to research the truth for yourself. Because the issue is not the government listening to our daily conversations. On an individual level, I could frankly care less if the government or companies hear me talking about how many people go missing a year. Because clearly I'm podcasting my opinions to the world anyway. The greatest concern is data manipulation. Strategic content is being injected into the systems based off what a user is predicted to respond to. It's social engineering. And once AI is further integrated into our lives, through robots and biological symbiosis with AI, through products like Elon Musk's Neuralink, which we will be covering later this season, but once these products have completely integrated with our biology and the majority of our daily functions, what could be done with the data that's been collected all these years is truly terrifying. It's so important more than ever to advocate for our own rights to our own data and our own privacy and security that goes along with this right to internet. To also remain hypervigilant of our online footprint by getting access to all types of information on opposing opinions instead of sheepishly following one source or authority as an all-knowing truth. Nothing in this world is 100% true. And that's how I view everything thrown at me. In this day and age, it is healthy to be massively skeptical of all the information. And that is it for today's episode. I really hope you guys enjoyed a little bit of a different topic today, and I want to know what you think about this series on whistleblowers. If there's any whistleblowers specifically that you want to hear about, or what you think about the series as a whole. I want to thank you for listening to my show. I know that there are so many others out there. And that is it for today's episode. I really want to know what you think about the series on whistleblowers and if there's any other specific whistleblowers that you want me to cover. I want to thank you for listening to my show. I know there are so many out there, and I really work hard to curate unique information and format it just for your listening pleasure to provide a unique experience for you to set this apart from the different podcasts so you have some new stuff to listen to. If you like what you hear, please follow the podcast at The Conspiracy Manifesto on Instagram, where I'm trying to put a community together because I often feel so alone in the world, in my mind, in my beliefs, and I believe that there's more of us out there who just need a platform to connect on. You can find all the resources I discussed on the show today and any other episode on theconspiracymanifesto.com. Contact information is also there if you want to inquire directly on any future episode topics that you want to hear. If you are able to, I really appreciate any donations that are made to the show, as I'm not taking any sponsorships or am monetized at this moment. It helps me grow the show, the equipment, the production value, and be able to provide a better podcast to those who enjoy it. If you're not able to, that is totally okay. A follow, a like, and a review where you listen to your podcast means just as much to me and to the growth of this podcast. To promote the spread of these conspiracies, because the world needs to know. And of course, I will see you next week for another episode of the Conspiracy Manifesto.